Welcome to the first Retro Gaming Online podcast. I'm Brad, and I'm here with Mark and Steve. And what we're going to do is just kind of introduce ourselves and go over, you know, how we experienced some of the video games when we were children. And we'll introduce you kind of to us, and then we're going to basically go over what you can expect from our future podcasts. So, before we get started, make sure you check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/retrogamingonline, as well as youtube.com/retrogamingonline. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast service you're listening to us on now. We're on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Google Podcasts. If one thing that's cool is if you listen to us on the Anchor app, you can actually leave us a message, and we can actually reply to that message in the next podcast. So we want to ask anyone who's listening to leave us a message. We'll pick a few questions if we have any, and we'll answer them on the podcast. So let's get started. First, we're kind of going to just discuss what was the first console that each of us had. And I'll start out by saying the first console that was purchased for me was the Nintendo Entertainment System. But the first console, or the first video games really that I played at my house, was my dad's Commodore 64. So it took me a few weeks to figure it out, but I would watch how he would launch every game, and you had to type the was it load comma 8 comma 1 or quotation star quotation comma 8 comma 1 or something weird like that. So I used to get little bits of it every time, and I'd write it down and take it back into my room. Finally, what would happen is he would go to work, and then I would turn his computer on and launch games and play, like, the boxing game for the Commodore 64, Ghostbusters for the Commodore 64, as well as the Dungeon and Dragon games, and Pools of Radiance, which were released on the NES a little bit later. That was kind of my first experience with video games. How about you, Mark? What was your first experience?
My first experience was good old Atari 2600. Didn't really own it. Played it over my aunt's house. And I think one of the first games, or the first game I really remember playing, was Outlaw. Just because it was a good two-player game. Play against the computer. And you could, like, shoot through the cactus. The wagon that would go up and down, the first ever shooter, and then from there, just like the, she had a lot of, classics, like, Popeye, G.I. Joe, Hubert, Frogger, Star Wars, but my first ever system that I owned, was, Nintendo. I think just about everyone's here, their own personal system was, Nintendo, and then obviously, Mario and Duck Hunt. I really don't remember the second game too much, and then we had, you know, the normal Zelda. I think at the time, Super Mario 2, when that came out, was my favorite, because I feel like you really got to see Luigi in action, and all the other characters had their own special abilities.
Yeah, I never actually played the Ataris too much. I mean, I played once or twice at my cousin's house, but I didn't get into the consoles until really the NES. I mean, I played the Sega Master System at a friend's house. My dad used to go over there and play Dungeons and Dragons like once a week or once every couple weeks. And we'd go over there, and they had a Sega Master System. I remember playing, like, Altered Beast on there, and the motorcycle racing game. Yeah, Steve, so what was your first gaming experience? What consoles did you own, and what was the first console that you played?
So it's hard to say, because I remember, I have fond memories of pretty much all the systems, but I remember going over a cousin's house and playing the Atari and Pac-Man and stuff like that. I know we had one. I haven't seen it for years, but the first system owned was the NES, and my memory of the NES was pretty much I won it at an auction. I didn't win it. My grandparents won it for me at an auction, and I'll never forget it. It was $106
The auction was $106?
Yeah, it was a bidding auction, and the bid was $106, and we won it for $106.
Nice.
So I remember, you know, running it home, and, you know, I can't even tell you how old I was. I was probably like 6 or 7, and unwrapping it, and then I just remember that damn dog laughing at me. That's my memory of the games I own. Started off with, like, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out was, like, one of the first games I owned, actually.
So you predominantly, though, after the NES, owned the Genesis after that, right?
Yeah, so what happened with that was, it was kind of funny. I had a friend of mine that, you know, when we actually played outside, he got a Genesis, and he got Mortal Kombat.
Nice.
And Mortal Kombat was the game that, you know, parents weren't letting kids play. And so we would, like, we went over his house. His mom was working. She didn't get him to a certain time, and she was like, you can have one friend in the house at a time without getting in trouble. So we literally stood outside the back window. I'll never forget. We were all standing there looking through the window, watching whoever's turn it was play Mortal Kombat. And we actually went to Toys R Us at Glen Burnie, and we bought, I bought the Mortal Kombat first before I bought the Sega.
That's awesome. I remember the blood code, ABACABB.
Yeah, that's it.
I have no idea why I remember it. I never owned a Sega console in my entire life, but I can remember that code for some reason.
I did. I played a lot of Sega. That was my system.
Well, the blood was key for Mortal Kombat, especially. I think that's what put Sega on the mark, was the fact that it had blood and Nintendo did not.
Yeah, that definitely put it above the Super Nintendo as far as...
It had sweat.
Yeah. So, Steve, what were some of your favorite games as a kid on any of the retro systems?
I just go with, like, NES, for instance. Like, one of my fondest memory favorites was Street Fighter. I think it was, like, 2010, I think, was the game.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about that game was that you could do backflips against the wall. I know that sounds horrible, but to see a game, anything with a flip was really cool. Like, I knew Ninja Gaiden had, you could flip when you jumped and stuff, but to actually run up a wall and flip backwards was pretty cool. Yeah. And I enjoyed that game. And I remember you did a Let's Play with Nemo,
mm-hmm.
Little Nemo.
The Dream.
That was... Yeah, Dream, the Dream Master.
Dream Master, yeah, that's right.
I think it was Dream Master. That mm-hmm. was another game that I owned that I really liked for NES. Sega-wise, I think... there was a lot of Sega games I really enjoyed. There's a game that I don't think a lot of people have played, and it was kind of a pricey game as I got older. It was hard for me to get because it was like a $45 game even later on. Was Pirate's Gold.
I don't think I ever actually played that.
It's pretty cool. It's like you start off, take over a ship. You have to fight a guy with fencing, and you take his ship, and you have to sail around and collect men. I'm trying to think of the game nowadays that is very similar to it. I can't. It's a PC game.
It sounds like the there's an NES game called Pirates that it sounds kind of familiar with. It sounds like. I had played it on the NES as well as the computer back in the day, where you get a ship and you can upgrade your ship, and you have to duel people.
Yeah,
you go into town and get supplies and helpers and stuff like that.
Well, I'm curious if this, because I didn't do any research on this game as far as that, to see if they're coordinated in any way that, you know, like the makers of this made that. I don't remember who it was made by, but
it was called Pirates with an exclamation point. Sid Meier's Pirates.
Yeah, so they make that for the PC now, and it's pretty similar.
Oh, okay.
Sid Meier's. Yeah, they made it. Actually, I think it came out for the PlayStation.
So it like sounds like a
3.
Yeah, it sounds like a better version of Sea of Thieves that's out right now.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? What were some of your favorite games?
I'd say my for Sega, we're gonna switch over to Sega now. Would be Battletoads and Double Dragon, especially the Battletoad Double Dragon Ultimate Team Up. Me and my brothers and buddies would play that game start to finish, just nonstop. And then obviously the regular Battletoads, one of my all-time favorite games. Just play that all day long.
What about in general, like Super Nintendo, NES, 64?
64, I mean, who doesn't love Perfect Dark, GoldenEye? Yeah. I used to love Army Men. Oddly enough, mm-hmm. Toy Story was a great game, I think. I can see it in my head. The Star Wars game.
Rogue?
Yes.
Yeah. So I had once I got to the Super Nintendo level, I was super into RPGs. So some of my favorite games, Final Fantasy III or Final Fantasy VI, depending on how you want to say it, Final Fantasy II, Chrono Trigger. I loved UN Squadron on the Super Nintendo, and Legend of Zelda A Link to the Past is still my all-time favorite game. I try to play through it at least once a year. On the Genesis, though, I really enjoyed, it's called Shining Force. And it's kind of like the predecessor to the Final Fantasy Tactics games, where you go into battle and you have this full battlefield and you can move like a certain amount of squares, and you have to bring your character towards the enemy and attack them. They had like 3 or 4 games on the Genesis that was really cool. We would play that on the Sega Channel, which my cousin had. That's how I actually discovered it.
Sega Channel.
Yeah, that's how we discovered it. It was on the Sega Channel. And then we rented it a bunch after that. And speaking of renting games, what are some of your favorite games you ever rented? And one of my games that stands out, I never owned it. It was on the Sega Genesis. It was called General Chaos.
I remember that game. That was a 4-on-4 game. I remember that.
You had the army guys, and you could either have like the flamethrower, the grenade thrower, the machine gun guy, and it was like a strategy game. You had to like plan your team against their team, and then you could kind of use the environment as a, you know, to either help you or it would hinder you in getting the enemies. But that was one of the games that I never actually owned, but we always rented whenever it was available at Blockbuster if we didn't see anything like specific. Like that was always our go-to fallback game.
Yeah, I did. I mean, this is horrible, but I would actually rent NHL 94, 95, 96, whichever one was out. Mm-hmm. Every time I went to the video store, it was, I always got two. I got a game that I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and I wound up getting an NHL game because I love playing the hockey games on the Sega. I just enjoyed it. A buddy of mine that lived across the alley from me when growing up, we basically, NHL 94, we built a team. We built characters on there. It was like one of the games you could, because it had a memory card in it, it had the yellow piece on the cartridge for the memory. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was a battery or whatnot, but the Sega had it.
EA had their odd looking cartridges. Yeah. They were taller and had that little notch cut out of the side.
Knew why they did that. I might have to look into that. Why those cartridges had that? If it was bigger boards or whatever.
I could be wrong, but my understanding was it was similar to the Tengen thing with Nintendo. They didn't actually license the games through Sega.
Really?
So they made their own cartridges. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. I'll double check that. But you always got it. There was always an Old Faithful renting game that you just absolutely knew was going to work. You knew you were going to have fun with that. What about you, Mark? I know you used to go over to Brooklyn Video in Baltimore.
I did. I think most of my games that I would rent from there, a lot of good ones, a lot of bad ones.
that's the problem with renting games back in the day. All you had was the box art, and some of the local rental stores didn't even have the box art. They just had it might say just the name or like a black and white Xerox of the cover, and you could barely make it out.
I know. Like, I remember, oh, sweet, Back to the Future. That's going to be a great game. No.
Not so much.
No,
it wasn't. Like, Back to the Future 2, just as bad.
I know. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde? Nope.
I never really played that game. I mean, obviously, everybody's seen the video of every video game nerd as far as, like, you know, the game was bad. I never played it, so I didn't know much about it.
Yeah, Castlevania, like, I still, like, I remember, like, I could never get past, like, the first or the second level because I never knew to go kneel in the corner and...
Yeah. Solomon's Quest or whatever.
Yeah, blow the whistle or whatever the hell it is to get teleported. And I'm like, man, this game sucks. It's only one level. You can't go anywhere.
Fighting Medusa is still one of the memories that stands out in my head, like, actually specific instance in playing a video game.
That, I think, you know, you think you stumble across some great gems, like Bubble Bobble was a great game I love to rent. And then Micro Machines.
I love that.
Brooklyn Video had, like, all the off-brand, I guess, because I guess they were cheaper to buy. A lot of the Tengen games, like, what was it?
Gauntlet.
F-City, or F-15, City Wars, and Rolling Thunder.
Yeah, I found Gunsmoke at the videos at the rental store, and Gunsmoke turned into one of my favorite Nintendo games at the time. It's almost like a, nowadays you have those endless runners, but this was almost just like an endless shooter where you would walk up in this western town and just shoot people coming out of saloons, and
you get a horse.
Yeah, you get a horse. Yep.
Yeah. I remember, I think, Mark, you and I played that, if I recall. You came over when Gavin was first born, and we were playing with that, but we put the cheat code in just to see how far we could get, because it was like, no sooner you started, you died. One hit, dead.
Steve, what are the console? What are you collecting for right now? What consoles are you actually collecting for?
Well, I actually just got, like I told you, I got a Sega Saturn. I don't know much about it, period. I really don't. And I do see that the games are very expensive. I found that out. But
yeah, they didn't really have a huge selection of games, so that makes them
Daytona USA, which I was like, I'm kind of like excited for that. That was always a cool arcade game. When you went to arcade and you saw Daytona USA, that was actually a fun game to play at the arcade when it first came out.
Yeah, my cousin got that and the steering wheel for Christmas one year. Ooh. And we played so much Daytona USA with the steering wheel. It was crazy.
I'm still getting the Nintendo games. I'm still missing a bunch of like popular Nintendo games. Like Mark mentioned, Battletoads, and I still don't have Battletoads to this day. I've never owned it. I've played it a million times, but it wasn't one of those games where it was a game that I probably could remember renting and getting so frustrated with it that I wouldn't spend the money on it.
Yeah, whenever I went to someone's house who had Battletoads, I'd play it. Like, there was no question whether I would play it or not, but it never crossed my mind to buy it. And I think it was because it was so hard that I knew it would just frustrate the crap out of me.
And it's the same thing with Contra, because Contra was one of those games where if you went to somebody's house, everybody had to code. And mm-hmm. they would put the code in, and then you would beat it, and then you'd be like, well, why do I want to buy it? I've already beaten it.
Exactly, and you knew you couldn't beat it without the code, so there was no point in even trying.
I mean, I'm sure somebody's out there that's, you know, done it, but...
Yeah, I mean, people do now, but, I mean, it's a little different than when we have the internet. We can cheat and, you know, play all day.
I was thinking about that today. I was, like, sitting there thinking, I was like, you know, back in the day... when we played video games, for instance, Final Fantasy or Link or Zelda mm-hmm. or something like that, there was really no strategy to it. You read things as far as in-game stuff that would say, like, you need to go find a sword. It's in the Western, well, whatever. And then mm-hmm. you would go over there, and you really wouldn't know. And then you would go to, you know, to school the next day, and you would talk about it with your friends, and then they would say, oh, yeah, well, if you go down here, you find this. Nowadays, it's you go online, you look up, how do I, you know, what's a walkthrough? There was no such thing as a walkthrough.
Yeah, I remember, like, playing Final Fantasy, and me and my buddy would stay up till, you know, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, or until his parents came down and yelled at us for still being awake. And sometimes we'd take entire nights just to figure out one thing, whether it was Final Fantasy or a Zelda game. I remember, you know, the original Legend of Zelda was one of the first games that just took us forever to figure out that you put the bombs down so that, I guess, the Dodongo thing can actually eat them, and you blow them up basically from the inside.
Yeah, like what Mark mentioned, Castlevania. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally, it was like years later when I finally figured out you go kneel with whatever it was. I think you had to go beat the first boss and go back to this dead end. And I'm sure if anybody's played the game has gone to that dead end and sat there and said, oh, maybe it's just, you know, the developers just said, oh, we'll just stop the game here and go back and fight the monsters all over again.
I mean, at the time, you had no point of reference, so you had no idea what the intentions were.
Right.
I know. It sucks so bad. And then, luckily, one of my neighbors growing up, his dad was a computer programmer, worked somewhere in Baltimore. Obviously, I didn't really care. I the only thing I cared about was he was a huge gaming guy. So his son, who was my best friend at the time, had everything. And then when Nintendo Power came out and they started releasing, you know, the old original walkthrough and screenshots, we were like, oh, that's how you do that. And then with the backorder catalogs, I'm like, and then it's like, oh, okay, now you're starting to figure out. Oh, that's what you do there. That's what you do there. Like, it made Zelda, like, you to get that map of Zelda back mm-hmm. then was huge.
Yeah, because if you didn't buy the game, you didn't have the map. It was just that simple. I actually drew my own map of every single, it was like 5 or 6 sheets of paper in size, and I drew every single screen so that I knew how to get back and how to get to places. So what are you collecting right now, Mark?
So right now I am Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, and every once in a while if I come across a Famicom or Super Famicom game that's on sale or get a good deal with a bundle, I will pick them up as well. I think the next system I'm going to get is, my buddy is clearing out his attic, and he was like, hey, I got a Jaguar up here with a whole bunch of games for it if you want it. And I'm like, yes.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I've never played a Jaguar before.
My friend had it. It was okay. It was kind of like Sega CD. If you ever played Sega CD or Sega CD with the 32X, very similar to that. A lot of loading, a lot of live action kind of games.
Yeah, like Sewer Shark or whatever that was for the...
Yeah, I was going to ask, what games were out for the Jaguar? Because I mean, I know the system, I think it was like Red and Black or something, it had Jaguar in red, but I don't remember any games for it.
I don't think there were any real notable games. I know there's like one or two like horror games that are really big, but I want to see, I could probably just look it up, but the library for the Jaguar is so small. It's like 26 games or something like that. Then I'm sure someone will correct us. But for the most part, their games are like ridiculously expensive or completely worthless. there's like
no middle
ground. Well, if
you don't have them, they're not worthless.
No. Like if you go to look them up to buy them, they're like either like $3 or $4 or they're $180, $300. Like there's no like $40 or $50 game.
Yeah, so right now I'm mainly just collecting Nintendo and Super Nintendo. I'll pick up Nintendo 64 games and Genesis games if they come along with a bundle or if I just see a really good price. But some of the things I want to get, I'm on the hunt for I want a Virtual Boy because I just want to have one. I think they're cool, even though they're terrible. But the Virtual Boy, and I want a Japanese Famicom, mainly for show, obviously. But I don't know, I just like the look of it. I think it looks cool, even though it looks like a cheap plastic toy, but I just like the way it looks. What's out there that you guys are actually like looking for? Like if one of your, not like a little Samson or something super expensive and ridiculous, but like one thing that you want to get.
Well, I'm currently looking for, like I told you, the first generation Sega.
The one with the volume knob.
The volume knob and the on-off switch.
Yeah.
Like, I know they have Sega 3, or...
The Gen 3 was a weird-looking one. The Gen 2 was the smaller one with the two push buttons.
Yeah, that's the one I currently have. Mm-hmm. And it's funny is like, so, a buddy of mine at work, we were looking at, we were talking about, when I was telling him about the Sega Saturn, he was like, we were discussing the Sega CD, and we found that the Sega CD, it looked like it had two different models. It had a model for the big first-gen Sega, and then they had a model that is more, I think, more popular because it's the one I'm used to seeing, is the one that connected with the, I'm going to call it the second-generation Sega, which is the one you're referring to with the two buttons that it sat on the side.
Yeah, I actually think there were three
versions.
But
the first-gen was a fat, like a CD, it actually looked like a DVD player that sat underneath.
Well, there's that one, and I think there's a side by side for the original, for the original Genesis as well. It sits to the side of it, just like the just like it does with the second gen.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen the stackable one. I had only saw the one on the side.
Yeah, my buddy, his he had both Segas because we ended up, or somehow the bigger one, Gen 1, got broken. And the Gen 2 just kind of clicked in to the same Sega CD.
Oh, you're saying it was the same dock?
Yeah, I don't mean that.
The same system.
Yeah, the same dock. I don't remember ever seeing a smaller dock, but again,
It looks like it had an extension for the larger one. Like, it was designed for the smaller one, but it had some kind of extension piece that would extend to the size of the big one. Yeah, a Sega CD would be cool. I kind of want one of those.
And even a 32X would be pretty cool to have. Like, I mean, I was a Sega fan. I always have been. So I'm like, I don't know. I just really enjoyed Sega.
I think the downside to the 32X is it was so flawed, and it needed its own, like, a separate power unit, if I remember correctly.
Did it use batteries?
No, it had its own, like, another adapter you had to have. But, like, my buddies, like, his would work sometimes, and sometimes it wouldn't. And then it would recognize certain 32X games, and then it wouldn't play, like, other 32X games. And I remember that being like a big issue because his dad went out and returned it and got another one. And I think they were just kind of notorious for that, which is why they never really, I guess, pushed that avenue, to promote it more, other than the handful of games that came out with it, was because it just didn't work half the time for whatever reason.
So what are you looking for right now, Mark? What's your thing that you'd buy if you saw it right now at a decent price?
At a decent price? Pretty much just any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, that's not like that smoke or yellow. Mm-hmm. Preferably complete in box. I came across some okay deals, but I think people are reaching when they want like $250 for just a regular action set.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can track down some grandma up in up north and some of those farmers' yard sales that they have. Other than that, you know what I really want to start is just the old original Game Boy. Like, I missed the Game Boy, and then it had the Entertainment Center adapter, I think is what it was called, where it clicked over top of it and it plugged in and had like the surround sound speakers that folded out. And then that magnifying glass that went over top of it with the light to make the screen bigger.
I have a light. I actually have the light.
No, this was like an all-in-one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it just kind of slid in there, and you had the speakers on the side, and then it had its own light, and then the magnifying screen that went over it, so it made it seem like it was like a 4 or 5 inch screen.
All right, well, so I guess, that's just a little bit of us. We want to just let you guys get to know us a little bit. And what we plan to do in future podcasts is kind of not only just talk about kind of what's happening in our game collections, what's happening in the retro gaming community, and some retro gaming news that's happening at the time we film our podcast. We also want to do like a group game review. So each episode, we're going to pick one game. We're all going to play it separately, gather our own opinions about it, and then we're going to come onto the podcast and kind of talk about what each of us liked and didn't liked. We'll kind of give it a grading based on graphics, sound, gameplay, story, all that kind of stuff. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this first episode, and if you did, please make sure you subscribe to us on the podcast service of your choice, as well as give us a ranking, hopefully 5 stars, something like that. That'd be appreciated. And I think that's about it for this episode. So for myself, Steve, and Mark, I want to say see you guys later.